This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning and welcome to the Friday Sporting Edition of Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Hewitt, and coming up, a two-year search for overseas talent is starting to pay off for Football Federation Samoa as their under-17s make the OFC Championship quarterfinals for the first time ever.
If you look at the pool of players that we've found in the last 2 years, we've got up to about 210 players across the world who previously, to us contacting them, they wouldn't even know they were eligible for Samoa, let alone good enough to put on a Samoan shirt.
A message from the PNG Lewis coach to WBBL franchises in Australia: give my players a chance.
They probably read the game a little bit differently, and that's got its pros and cons. But in terms of their ability, absolutely, they could play in that competition. You just need someone to take a bit of a punt on one of them.
And could the hottest soccer talent in the Pacific be bound for a professional career in Europe?
When you look at the technical ability, like the pace, like the strength, everything Rava has, this is an opportunity for him to make a breakthrough for Solomon Islands and even the Pacific.
More to come on Rafael Leao's bid to secure a pro soccer contract in Turkey, or maybe Bosnia, later in the programme. But first, it's the end of an era this weekend as New Zealand prepares to stage a World Rugby Sevens tournament for the last time. Host city Hamilton won't be on the list for the new-look World Series next time around, which will come as a blow to fans of Fiji, Samoa and regular guest teams Tonga and Papua New Guinea, who've come to regard the event as the nearest thing to a home tournament. However, New Zealand rugby are not going down without a fight, and while they may no longer be wanted by World Rugby, as Jordan Fennell reports, they're hatching plans for new international sevens events with a distinctly Pacific flavour.
From next season, the World Rugby Sevens Series will be honed down to just seven tournaments, and so Hamilton has become a sacrificial lamb. New Zealand Rugby's General Manager, Professional Rugby and Performance, Chris Lendrum, says if the new model generates more revenue to invest in the game, that will be fantastic. But losing hosting rights after more than two decades was a bitter pill.
We believe we have a very proud record of event delivery. We've hosted a tournament as part of the World Sevens Series for 23 years, and believe we've done that really well. So we're gutted for our teams and our fans.
The end of the Hamilton Sevens is also a blow for Tonga as they look to build their presence on the world stage, and they hope muscle their way into the core group. Right now, they have a wild card to play in Hamilton and in Sydney a week later. Next time round, Sydney will still be on the calendar, but what some see as the Pacific's home tournament has been taken away, much to the disappointment of Tonga's team manager, Richard Waitman.
Oh, I mean, for us, it's been a good opportunity to play here. It's close to Tonga, so that's been pleasing for us. You know, got a lot of our supporters can get in. But what we want to do is we've got to look at that as a real opportunity that we're here at the last Sevens tournament to be held in Hamilton. And, you know, we're actually playing in it, so that's pretty cool, particularly as we've got the All Blacks Sevens and we've got the Wallaby Sevens, so two of our close Pacific neighbours, and also GBR, so pretty special opportunity to be playing those three teams.
And while Tonga are out to end their run in Hamilton on a high note, at New Zealand Rugby, Chris Lendrum is already looking to the future.
Just because we're not hosting a tournament in the foreseeable future on the World Series, that doesn't necessarily mean that Sevens international tournaments in New Zealand are lost for good. We'll be exploring ways to potentially bring non-World Series tournaments or create those tournaments here in New Zealand, and in part because it's important for the wider Pacific region, and it's certainly important for Aotearoa New Zealand to have our teams performing in front of our fans and building that engagement and connection with the Sevens game.
In the recent past, there's been talk of New Zealand rugby stepping aside from the World Sevens circuit and allowing Fiji to host, or working with them as co-hosts. But with the demise of Hamilton, Chris Lendrum believes Fiji's prospects are rather bleak now.
Fiji really is a cradle of Sevens rugby. They deserve an opportunity, we believe, to host a tournament on the international stage. And certainly Fiji Rugby is an organisation that we're increasingly close with. Part of our vision for hosting a tournament in this next cycle of the World Series was to explore the possibility of doing that jointly with Fiji. But you're quite right that with New Zealand being told that we're not part of the immediate future of that series, so goes Fiji's future, we think.
However, while Tonga might miss Hamilton, a new qualifying format should increase their chances of becoming part of the top 12. The top four teams from the annual Challenger Series will take on the bottom four from the core group, looking to secure or hang on to places for the following season. And with more sevens to be played in Tonga itself, Richard Waitman is upbeat about the national side's prospects of joining Fiji and Samoa in the elite group.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think one of the things too is a local series starting up at home. That'll produce some more local talent. And then knowing that we've been there or thereabouts in the last three or four of those Challenger Series in that top four bracket. So certainly it's a great opportunity for us. I think the key is you've got to have that local connection. That's the importance of the local tournaments. I think you've just got to have a structured program. And we've got a really good mix of local and based out of New Zealand and Australia.
And as New Zealand rugby looks to a post-Hamilton future, Chris Lendrum says it's likely to have a big Pacific focus.
Absolutely. I think if we're to create another tournament opportunity with international teams participating here in New Zealand, it's clearly going to have a Pacific flavour to it. And over time, that will present opportunities to potentially take that tournament out of New Zealand or a tournament out of New Zealand and into the islands. So that's an exciting prospect for the region. You know, I want to stress that these are ideas only at this point. We're still digesting the fact that we're not part of the next cycle of the series. We're very much focused on delivering one last outstanding tournament this weekend in Hamilton, and as soon as that's wrapped and done, we'll start moving attention to what's next, and the possibility of a Pacific tournament outside the World Series will be in highlights for us as we move forward.
But right now, the spotlight is on Hamilton's farewell. The New Zealand team in the men's and women's events will want to win on home soil for the last time, of course, and while winning the tournament is unlikely for Tonga, Richard Waitman says the team is in good shape.
Oh, look, this has probably been one of our better preps. I mean, that's due to just the commitment from the boys. You know, we've had a squad of about 18 that have been training probably since straight after the World Cup, then in November, and obviously boosted our confidence with winning the Oceania Sevens for the first time we've ever won that. And I tipped Aussie 22-21 and pool play and went on unbeaten through that. And that group stayed together, and then a couple of new additions as well. And so it's been very good prep. Great having a mix between local-based players back in Tonga, and it's great to see some of that fresh talent coming out of some of the competitions over in Tonga, and then some new young players that are based in New Zealand, and we've still got some of their more experienced here as well. So a very good mix and a very good preparation.
And Tonga have certainly had their moments at the New Zealand Sevens in the past. The year 2008, when the tournament was played in the capital, is one that stands out for Richard Waitman.
The team weren't favoured at all and ended up going on and making the semi-finals and only missing out on making the final of the Wellington Sevens, losing the semi-final to Samoa 24-21. You know, picked up wins over the likes of South Africa in the quarter-final. Full stadium, and you know, the characters that would come dressed up in the crowd and just the vibe. The New Zealand Sevens were outstanding. To actually see the boys when they made that semi-final in 2008, it was pretty special.
Cutting back inside is Kailea. What a start, Kailea. Well, that's exactly what Tonga must have needed to find the inspiration.
Skalk van der Merwe's try before half-time brought the box back to within 2 points. Who would strike the killer blow?
Now a real chance up the short side. There's a lovely little dummy, and away goes Pateki. Pateki with what could be the vital score. This could be the winning score. Persistent pressure paid off.
Memories of Tonga's run to the semi-finals at the World Rugby Sevens Tournament in New Zealand 14 years ago. And the reporter there was Jordan Fennell. And for this weekend's final event in Hamilton, I can confirm Tonga will be in that tough pool with Great Britain, Australia and New Zealand, while Fiji and Samoa face off in a pool that also includes France and Kenya. And in the women's event, Fijiana will take on New Zealand, Great Britain and guest team Papua New Guinea. You're with Pacific Beat here on ABC Radio Australia for a Friday morning, which means we're talking sport, and the OFC Under-17 Men's Football Championship has reached the quarter-final stage with four matches to be played over the weekend in Suva. The host nation Fiji will take on Cook Islands. Defending champions New Zealand meet Vanuatu. Tahiti face Tonga, and Samoa will play New Caledonia. The eventual winners of the tournament and the runners-up will both get to represent Oceania at the FIFA Under-17 World Cup to be played in Peru in November. OFC's that Jamie Wall has been keeping a close eye on proceedings and joins us on Pacific Beat. So, Jamie, good morning to you. Welcome once again.
Good morning, Richard. Great to be talking with you again.
So it often boils down in OFC tournaments, especially at age group level, as New Zealand and who. I mean, is that the way you see it this time? Or could New Zealand potentially hit a stumbling block if they get past Vanuatu? They may very well come up against host Fiji.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a bit closer than we first would have thought, you know, in other OFC tournaments, given New Zealand did, when you talk about stumbling blocks, they've already kind of had one in that first game that we talked about last week, where they got past New Caledonia 3-2 and were actually down at one stage. So they are a very good side, obviously. They went on to put 11 past the American Samoa in their next match, but you know, there's enough there for Vanuatu to perhaps be confident of being able to exploit. And it will be, you know, if they go on and do win their quarterfinal and make it through, and Fiji go through as well, that'll be a really interesting game, because Fiji have unearthed a couple of really talented young players. And one guy who I wanted to mention this morning that might be familiar to anyone in the Sydney area is Ibrahim Faisal, who won man of the match in their first game and has been really dominant. And he plays for the Leichhardt Club in Sydney. And, you know, they've managed to build like quite a strong midfield around him. And the Fijians have made their quarterfinal off the back of a win over Tonga the other night, that was played in absolutely torrential conditions. I'm sure ABC Australia has been informing people of the weather conditions in the Pacific at the moment, but there was enough rainfall in that game to perhaps start rounding up a couple of each animal and put them on an arc. But the two teams still managed to put on a very good game. So it was a testament to the skill of the Tongans and the Fijians to still pull out a game that the Fiji ended up winning 3-0.
Now, the other half of the quarterfinal draw sees Tahiti taking on Tonga, Samoa playing New Caledonia, as I mentioned. And Samoa, an interesting team. I mean, they seem to be climbing up the OFC ladder ever so steadily, and they've unearthed all these overseas players. We'll talk more about that shortly with their chief scout. But, I mean, could you see Samoa perhaps producing an upset against New Caledonia?
I absolutely could. I absolutely could. They lost their first game, but bounced back to beat Tonga 6-0 in their second game, and in fact had a really promising young player, Pharrell Traynor, score 4 goals in that game. And I'm really excited about Pharrell. He's another guy based in Australia. He's part of the Newcastle Jets under-21s system there. So, you know, there's a pathway there for him to develop, and he's decided to represent Samoa right now, which is great. And if you remember back to last year when we talked about the Women's Nations Cup, you know, I think the COVID break had really forced the hand of a lot of these nations to just look elsewhere, think outside the box about where they're getting their players from. And so I think that'd be a really interesting discussion that you have with Samoa's scout, because you know, it's just the way that these guys are putting these teams together now. Pharrell's a big striker. You know, they a team like Samoa can play a bit of target man football with him, and I think that he's going to enjoy some pretty advantageous matchups in this game against New Caledonia. Like you said, they are going in as underdogs, but yeah, I think out of all of the quarterfinals, this one could be the one that we could see an upset.
Now, you mentioned American Samoa, the one team that have departed the party. We started with 9 teams, now we have 8. Interesting note, though, that in the American Samoan lineup for their first game, and he came on as a sub in the second game, young man called Dylan Salapu. He's the son of Nicky Salapu, who is the unfortunate goalkeeper way back in 2001, who was on the wrong end of that 31-0 defeat by Australia. Nicky, I believe, is intending to be at the Pacific Games this year, playing for the senior American Samoa side now. His son is playing in midfield for the under-17s. They're a very determined family, the Salapus, aren't they? They don't mind playing the hard game, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great to be talking with you about another family connection in the Pacific. You know, when you look through these teams, you often see, you know, the same surname over and over again, and it's brothers and cousins and fathers and sons in this case. And yeah, I mean, obviously, Nicky is famous for probably something that, you know, most footballers don't want to be famous for, but, you know, having to pick the ball out of his net 31 times. But at the same time, it shows the determination of a nation that's really up against it, you know, football-wise. You know, they battled hard. I must say that their goalie in the loss to New Caledonia, Alex May, had a fantastic game. You know, he really battled hard. And, I mean, I guess if you really want to look at the development of a keeper, you might want to send them to American Samoa because they're going to get a bit of work. I mean, that's not trying to denigrate the rest of the team, but, you know, they are up against it. And Dylan is obviously, you know, a young prospect coming through for them. Like you said, he saw some good minutes on the field in both of their games. He's only 14 years old, so he's got a lot of running left in him. We might see him again at the next under 17 tournament in a couple of years. So, you know, it's great to see the family name get carried on through a team that can only really go up.
And if his dad keeps going as he says he will, they've indicated that they quite like to play together for the senior team at some point. Maybe that might be sooner rather than later.
Oh, wouldn't that be a great story? You know, we've already got a great story of American Samoa football, which they've made a movie out of, and I can't wait to see that. What's it called? Last Goal Wins or Next Goal Wins?
Next Goal Wins.
I believe
yes.
That's. Next Goal Wins, yeah, that's coming out later this year, and I think that it's going to do a lot to raise the profile of firstly of American Samoan football, but also football in the Oceania region. So yeah, we're really looking forward to that movie coming out and seeing how that whole fixture, that 10-year period between losing 31-0 and then coming back to win their first ever game in World Cup qualifying goes. So yeah, that's going to be really cool.
Yep, the work of Taika Waititi, no less. I'm looking forward to that too. Jamie, thank you very much indeed for joining us, and the quarterfinals in the OFC Under-17 Championships being played out over this weekend. Now, Samoa's story ahead of the Overseas Under-17s Championship is an interesting one, as indicated there, with the squad coming together after a prolonged search across the world for players with Samoan heritage. At the end of the team's 6-0 win over Tonga in the group stage, there were 9 heritage players on the field, including the captain we mentioned there, Farrell Traynor, Australian-born, part of the Under-21 squad at A-League club Newcastle Jets. He helped himself to 4 goals in all.
This time, the Samoan skipper with a chance. He gets his goal. Farrell Traynor. He has got that much-needed goal. Farrell Traynor, the skipper. And here, they get a chance. Can he bury this one? Definitely he can. That is the man of the moment. Farrell Traynor gets his hat-trick. This guy is going to be a name to look out for in Oceania football in years to come.
And it appears there are plenty more like Farrell Traynor waiting in the wings as a result of a 2-year project aimed at finding male and female players from outside the country to represent Samoa at all levels, from junior to senior. So how do you go about finding these players, especially in the younger age groups? Alistair McClay is Chief Scout for Football Federation Samoa.
What we found is the best way to get in front, especially from a Pacifica point of view, is to get in and amongst the communities. So we did start to talk to clubs and schools, but it's very hard for someone as a scout to ask for information about, do you have a player that's got heritage from Samoa? But we found a lot more success if you get in within the communities, within church groups or the embassy of that country, or even just friends and family of players that you've already identified. Then once you've got a little bit of credibility as a scout, then you almost get referred to another player and then another player and another player, and it kind of just grows out from there. So if you look at the pool of players that we found in the last 2 years, we've got up to about 210 players across the world who previously, to us contacting them, they wouldn't even know they were eligible for Samoa, let alone good enough to put on a Samoan shirt. So we've got about 18 scouts around the world now that are doing this and are infiltrating different communities, whether it's in Pennsylvania in America or the north of England, or even Germany has a lot of Samoans there.
And I presume a significant number come from New Zealand and from Australia, but from what you said there, clearly some from much further. Further afield Field too?
The majority is New Zealand and Australia. But you're right. When you look at the US college system, we've found players in Spain, Dubai. So they are dotted in other places. But yeah, Australia and New Zealand certainly has the majority of the players we find.
Finding the players is one thing, but then bringing all these players together and actually getting them used to playing as a team, that must be incredibly hard. I mean, I'm assuming prior to the current OFC Under 17 Championships, the coach had very little time to get his act together, as it were.
Players only arrive a couple of weeks before tournaments start. And you're right, if you didn't have any international-based players, you would have a much easier job because you'd have players from the island, players from the same club that have probably played with each other for a couple of years. Whereas when you bring in an international player who may not even know the national anthem to begin with, there's a huge amount of work that goes on with cultural elements, understanding how things work within a Samoan culture, you know, even if it's to do with prayers before training sessions, as an example. So yeah, there's a lot of work. Des and the team did a great job before going to Fiji. They had a lot of games in Samoa, and then you go into the tournament with some chemistry between those players that have never met each other to the players that have played with each other quite a lot. And I think that's important, that we complement the domestic players. We don't want to find the entire squad being international based, because you still need an element of the Samoan way. And the feedback we got from the under-20s last year and the senior women last year as well was the international players went away going, I actually learned so much about my heritage and my culture, let alone the football. That was such a great experience, which is quite a nice way to end things.
I take it, therefore, that this is not a question of you would like to go one way or the other. This is about finding the best 11 players available to represent Samoa, whatever age group, male or female. So if they come from the diaspora, fair enough. If they're from the islands, fair enough too.
Absolutely correct. We're looking for the best fit. And I suppose the long-term vision is, as we bring these international players into a domestic environment, you increase the domestic environment impact, as they might see things. Oh, wow, that's great how that player in Australia plays. We should take that back to our club. And it only increases the domestic pool as best we can.
So it will be Samoa against New Caledonia in the quarterfinals of the OFC Under-17s. And if you win that one, quite likely you'll come up against Tahiti in the semi-finals and you make the final. Finally, you're on your way to the World Cup.
And that's quite exciting. So if you put it that way, the under-17s boys are two games away from a World Cup. And if you think about this age group forever, they've never got out the group stages, let alone get to the quarterfinals. So already they've made history, which is amazing. And this is the future of the men's. There's going to be some players here that could be selected for under-23 Olympic qualifications later this year. There's going to be some boys here that could take part in World Cup qualifying for America and Canada in a couple of years, and in the next World Cup. So it's an amazing base and foundation for future. If they can go all the way, just as we found out in rugby with Samoa last year when they did so well in the World Cup, it drives a huge amount of support in many cities around the world. So it's just so great for the country that especially a young sports team can actually punch above its weight, which then makes it a bit easier for the next crop of young players that comes through the system.
One last point. You will be aware, I presume, of what happened to Solomon Islands, and they had this draconian punishment inflicted on them because of the misdeeds of one player. In tracking down these players, how certain are you that the squad that is out there in Fiji at the moment are all of the right age?
Yeah, so we have very stringent checks and balances in place and gatekeepers. So in my first year in this role, we did no scouting. We built processes, very strong processes, because you're right, we've seen the Solomon Islands. We saw the Cameroonian team in this last week going down the same route, that they're 25 players, I think, that were not the right age. So what we make sure is the parents understand the eligibility rules to begin with. Then there's a whole lot of documentation checks that go on. And this is before the head coaches even know about the player. There's nothing worse than a chief scout going, hello, head coach, here's a player. And then we find out actually they're not eligible. So we have a lot of documents that get sent to us electronically. They are checked. We even are in conversations with some FIFA representatives, just making sure that we're doing the right thing. And then once that's done, we have a passport process as well. So we have direct links into the Samoan passport embassy. And then there's a process to gain a passport with the right documentation, the right evidence. And once they got a passport, then they are fully eligible. And that's what FIFA ticks it off, that these players are, one, they're Samoan, and two, they're the right age. So I'm 110% certain that every player that we found and will find in the future will tick those boxes.
Yeah, you can't be too careful, that's for sure, when you're dealing with OFC. Alistair McClay is Chief Scout for Football Federation Samoa. Hold the front page! Now, Let's take a look at some of the news stories from around the region on this Friday morning. Kyle Evans is with me. Kyle, good morning to you.
Good morning, Richard. Happy Friday.
And to you too. An investigation set to continue in Fiji now that the former Attorney General, Isai Kaiyum, is back in the country. There's quite a lot of speculation as to whether he would return. He has. So what's the latest?
Yeah, that's right. So an investigation will resume against him into alleged incitement of communal antagonism. So that's the charge. And this is after he returned from Fiji after taking that leave of absence overseas, like you said, following the election on December 26, which prompted police to issue a border alert. So according to the FBC, police have compiled with the watch order in place. And upon his arrival, we'll inform the Criminal Investigations Department, who will proceed with the investigation.
And I gather Fiji's election chief, the man who run the affair, he's been suspended following a complaint against him.
Yeah, it's all happening at the moment. So the government says a complaint of misbehaviour has been received by the Constitutional Officers Commission against the election supervisor. That's Mr. Mohamed Saneem. We heard a lot about him, obviously, during the election recently. He's been suspended as a result, and a tribunal is going to be appointed to carry out an investigation into that matter. In the meantime, however, he'll remain on full pay.
Now to Vanuatu, the weather not great over there, and it's affecting those at sea. A bit of a suspension in place, I gather.
Yeah, that's right. So the government has advised all ship owners, agents, captains, even banana boat operators to suspend all their services while Cyclone Irene lingers ominously offshore. Failure to do so will result in a 300,000 Vatu fine. So this, of course, follows a severe weather warning issued by the Vanuatu Meteorology. And we do know that flooding and power cuts have already been reported in Port Vila.
Let's hope the situation doesn't get any worse in Vanuatu. And now to PNG. Many people were hoping for a bit of history when it came to the election of the Governor-General, but it's back to the future, really, I gather.
Yeah, not to be, unfortunately. So Sir Bob Dade has retained the title after being the title of Governor-General after being voted in again, making him the first person ever to hold the title for two terms. So he managed to secure 72 votes to beat out female candidate Miss Winnie Kiap, who finished with 33 votes. The result disappointed many, according to reports. Miss Kiap was obviously the first female candidate in history nominated for the role. Many wanted to see her get up and have actually taken to social media to voice some of that displeasure. Obviously, it would have been groundbreaking, but not to be. So, Mr. Dade, he'll continue in that role as sort of representative for PNG in all Commonwealth arrangements. He most recently attended Queen Elizabeth's funeral.
So no radical changes in Papua New Guinea that so many people were hoping for. And Sir Bob Dade will continue as Governor General. Kyle, thanks very much indeed for the update.
Thank you, Richard.
Very good morning to you. If you're just joining us here on Pacific Beat for a Friday, it's the Sporting Edition, and the PNG Labours were stopped in their tracks at the Australian Country Cricket Championships in Canberra. Just as they appeared to be building ahead of steam, the team had recovered from defeats against New South Wales, the ACT and Queensland, to beat both Victoria and Western Australia, and to win over South Australia in their final round-robin match would most likely have put them into the semi-finals. But after rain slowed down the games ahead of them, their match was called off over concerns about damage to the ground ahead of a first-class match due to be played between the ACT and Tasmania the next day. Needless to say, the Labours were far from happy, and neither was their coach, Kath Heppenstall, who felt the game ought to have been played.
It is frustrating, but at the end of the day, there's not a lot we could do about it. So the ground staff never actually handed the ground over to the umpires for us to play the game. So disappointing considering for the time frame that we would have actually been playing, the weather was fine for cricket.
Presumably your opponents, South Australia, were somewhat less concerned because a draw was fine for them. They're in the semi-finals, but you could have knocked them out if you'd played.
Yeah, too right. And building every game, we felt like we were getting some really good momentum and a really good chance to knock them off and to play in the finals.
So what do you take away from this tournament? Because you started off with, unfortunately, three defeats, then back-to-back wins. You look to be on a roll. Parker Siaka hit 70, which was the highest individual score for the Labours during the tournament. And you were taking wickets and restricting sides to low scores when they were batting first, but you didn't seem to be able to chase them down for some reason.
Yeah, we certainly felt like we had the best bowling attack in this competition, and we probably were just a little bit off the mark with the ball in the first game. But other than that, we'd been executing really, really well our bowling plans and had multiple contributors in our bowling lineup. But unfortunately, we just took a little bit to get going with the bat in this tournament. I guess these are the challenges that you have when we haven't played cricket as a team together since October, and we're playing against Australian teams that get to play every week at this time of the year. But yeah, not to make excuses, but we're a little bit slow to get going with the bat. We played on a wicket on the second day, which was a little bit tacky, I guess, foreign conditions for us, and we just didn't adapt in time. But yeah, we got ourselves into winning positions in our second and third game and unfortunately couldn't close it out. But we did feel like our last two games we were certainly getting some good momentum and really special performance from Pauke Siaka, and really set our batting innings up. So we've certainly been improving from game to game.
Where do you go from here? How much time will there be between this tournament and the next time the Lowers play, presumably internationally on that occasion?
We've got a tournament in March, Pacific Nations tournament, which will be really exciting. So against the same teams that we played last October in the Pacific Cup, so Vanuatu, Fiji and Samoa, and that tournament will take place in Fiji. And also a team will be entered from the Australian Defence Force. When we play those games, they won't be ICC recognised games, but that'll sort of round it out with another team. So that's our next big tournament. We've also got a couple of girls that are heading to Perth after this tournament to play for the South Perth Cricket Club, which they did prior to Christmas, and train with the Western Australian Cricket Association. Two girls will go to Brisbane and play in the Brisbane Premier competition. We've also got Tanya Ruma and Kaya Aruan selected in a Fairbreak 11 that's due to play in Canberra again, funnily enough, at the end of January. So they're playing in a team that's made up of cricketers from all around the world, from predominantly associate nations, and they'll play against the ACT Meteors. So there's bits and pieces happening for individual players, which is really, really exciting. But our next big tournament's in March.
And from your perspective as coach, can you see your way ahead now and see this team getting stronger and stronger throughout 2023?
Yeah, I think so. We improved so much in such a short period of time over in the UAE and then in Vanuatu. And it just goes to show with these girls, if they can have continuity of cricket, they've got a lot of potential. Our early results in this tournament probably showed that, yeah, we just haven't had any cricket between now and last October. But our aim for this year will be to play as much cricket as possible. The more cricket these girls can play, the better they will be for it. So we're looking to push to play in a few more competitions in Australia later on this year. And we've got our international schedule as well. And it was really pleasing to see some of our younger players step up in this competition when given the opportunity. So plenty on the horizon for us, but yeah, we're always pushing to play more cricket when we get the opportunity.
And it's a question that I, and I suspect others, have asked often over the years about the Lowers and indeed about the Barramundis. In terms of a player or players getting a chance perhaps to play in the Women's Big Bash here in Australia or an equivalent tournament elsewhere in the world, are we any closer to that happening? Is anybody prepared to take a chance, do you think, on one of your players?
Oh, I'd love it, Richard, if someone would take a chance on one of our players. We've certainly got players that offer something a little bit different than your standard international players. You know, our girls, I keep saying, they're incredibly skillful players. They probably read the game a little bit differently, and that's got its pros and cons. But we'd love for a player to get an opportunity. Are we any closer? I'm not too sure, but I think the more eyes we can get on our girls playing cricket, the better. And, you know, hopefully with them being able to play in competitions in Australia and the more coverage we can get, we're a little bit closer. But in terms of their ability, absolutely, they could play in that competition. We just need someone to take a bit of a punt on one of them.
Yeah, we certainly do. And as for that game that wasn't played, I mean, seriously, PNG were well and truly dudded there, weren't they, by the organisers of the Australian Country Cricket Championships. Very disappointing, because they were on a roll. There's every chance they could have been in the semis, but not to be. PNG Lowers coach Kath Hempenstall there on the line from Canberra.
Kalu now over the top for Solomon Islands, looking to use the pace of Leai. Leai, Leai bursting through. Leai, can he finish? Oh, he got to the near post, he's done it! 3-1 Solomon Islands, Leai on the score sheets again. The hat-trick last time against Tahiti, he's carried on that good form. And he scored in the second half here against Papua New Guinea. It's 3-1 Solomon Islands.
Rafael Leai scoring for the Solomons against PNG at the World Cup qualifying tournament in Doha last year, and now arguably the most talented young player in the Pacific, stands on the brink of what could be a ground-making move to Europe as a professional player. He's linked up with Velež Mostar, one of the leading clubs in Bosnia-Herzegovina, with the aim of preparing for a trial with Allianz Sport, who right now sit in the top 10 of the Super League in Turkey. The trial should have happened last year, but stalled over passport issues. David Hepere, who has known Rafael since his days with Marist FC in the Solomons, accompanied him on that abortive trip last time. David is also the brother of Hudson Wakeo, who owns the young player's current club in Honiara, Henderson Eels.
In September last year, me and Rafa, we travelled to Turkey, to Alayspor. That was arranged by Tone, who's one of the UEFA agents. When we went, two of us arrived in Istanbul, but there's an issue with a visa, so we returned back. Until Ednan and Tony, the two agents, they have another option. Ednan asked me to send Rafa to Bosnia because Bosnia is more convenient. They are like not strictly in visa. So that's why we arranged Rafa to go there first. Ednan, a goalkeeping coach for the club, so he can help Rafa to train Felix FC. They also want to see Rafa as well, like if they're impressed, they can maybe sign him. But the initial plan was maybe to adapt to the climate and the European football style before we can further arrange for Alayspor.
So that's the plan. How do you think he will adapt, first of all, to a European setting? Because it can be very hard sometimes for a young sports person, male or female, from the Pacific Islands to just settle in Europe. It's such a different environment.
Okay, that's a good question. I just spoke to Rafael and Ednan. We have a video call. Ednan is giving me some feedback about Rafa, because when he arrived there, he just goes straight away for the training. I think Rafa needs to take at least maybe a few weeks to adapt, especially of weather. And also the style there is more intense, the speed. You know, they're probably not so. It is one of the challenges that Rafa is facing. But according to Ednan, he say, I think Rafa will easily adapt. And talking also with Rafa, and Rafa also say that training was really tough, especially the intensity, the pace was really different. Let's see what happens.
What is interesting to me is Rafael first made the headlines when he was involved with the Solomons team that made it to the Under-17 World Cup, which is what, 5 years ago now. Yeah. So I guess he's, what, 21, 22 years old. Are you surprised that he hasn't been picked up sooner and maybe closer to home? I mean, you'd think, for example, looking at the success that Brian Kaltak from Vanuatu is having over here in the A-League, why not a young player like Rafael, who's clearly so talented?
We see the potential that Rafa have, because Rafa is playing for the Henderson Eels, and financially is one of the, it's been Solomon that they pay players. So the owner, Hudson, was seeing this potential in Rafa. Like Kaltak is, you know, physically the same. This is type of player that's same as Rafa. When he played in the Under-16 in Solomon, he's playing like somebody is 25 years old because of the physicality and the pace that he has. So we see the potential already in Rafa. Currently, he's the top scorer in the TSL. So 10 goals in 15 games, really impressive. So that's why we see this opportunity for Rafa, looking at the quality that he has.
So do you think he can make it? Do you think he'll get that pro deal, which I think I'm right in saying would be a first for Solomon Islands player?
We just cross our finger and just list hear from Ednan, because Ednan is the one who now dealing with Rafa. But for me, I see there's a few things that he needs to work on, because for me, if Rafa was trained under a professional setup, I think will help him in terms of psychological development, some aspect in terms of tactical and understanding of the game, especially defending and attacking what time. I mean, those stuff only Rafa need to know. But you look at the technical ability, like the pace, like the strength, everything Rafa has. But as a young person, you go live from your family, the friends, loved ones, you can psychologically, you are affected as well. And this is what happened in the past to Solomon Islanders like Benzema and Totori. Yeah? They have the psychologically, they are not capable of doing something. So that's the problem I saw most of the Solomon Island players. But I was asking Ednan to help Rafa on that side, encouraging him, make him to more determined. This is an opportunity for him to make a breakthrough for Solomon Islands and even the Pacific.
David Hapera, a supporter and mentor for Rafael Leai on his soccer journey to Turkey via Bosnia-Herzegovina, as he pursues what we hope will be a professional contract in Europe. You're with Pacific Beats, ABC Radio Australia for a Friday morning. I'm Richard Ewart, and another crop of big-name rugby players are available to play for their Pacific Nations of Heritage. Under World Rugby's changed eligibility rules, in Manu Samoa's case, that list includes the Chiefs' Josh Juani, who was capped just once for the All Blacks back in 2019. And perhaps the biggest and most glamorous name is that of the Hurricanes' Julian Sevier. Twice nominated for World Rugby Player of the Year, Sevier has been capped 54 times by New Zealand, but last featured for the All Blacks in 2017. The Manus coach, Salada Mapasua, would love to have him and Juani in his squad for the World Cup in France, but are the players ready to make that commitment?
They still have a whole campaign to get through, and I think that's where their heads are at the moment. And whilst there's been no firm commitment, there's also been no firm denial. if that makes sense. So there are a few players that I'm chatting to, and for now I've got a plan to be without them as well as be with them and see how they go, like so Julian and Josh over Super. And if it's something they really want to be a part of, they've got to want the opportunity. And for me, I've got a plan with as much certainty as possible in what their 33-man squad's going to look like.
With a player like Julian Savea, his record as an All Black is almost unsurpassed, but he hasn't played for New Zealand for, what, I think nearly 5 years now, which clearly makes him eligible to play for Samoa if he wants to come back. But how good a player is he going to be now compared with what he was when he was playing for the All Blacks? That must be the issue that you have to think about quite hard, I would imagine.
Yeah, and the way I look at it, I'm not looking at Julian Savea the All Black, because when he was in the All Blacks, he was almost untouchable. So for me, it's looking at Julian Savea at this point, the Hurricane, and also part of the conversation with someone like Julian is I've got to make sure his heart's in it, because there are so many Samoan players who would jump at the opportunity. So the sooner we can get to that point where it's definitive, yes, I'm available for selection, or no, I'm not available, then I'll be in a much happier place.
One player who I know you would have liked to have had on board for Manu Samoa, but you can't now because he's been capped by New Zealand, is Levi Amoa from Moana Pacifica. And you had some pretty strong things to say about that.
My understanding is Levi still is available for selection. He played for the All Blacks 15, which I thought was not a capped team. But Levi's case, for me, I just needed some clarity around things. And it was more around the processes. And I didn't have clarity on the processes of Moana Pacifica's role. I thought I was clear on who New Zealand rugby could and could not select. For me, I was just making sure that I was advocating for Mansa more, but also Pacific rugby, that we did have some clarity. I felt like there were some questions which still haven't been answered. An explanation was kind of given, but not to me directly. So that's where things are with Levi's case. But ultimately, it's down to the player and who they choose to be available for selection. I'm happy to get more certainty and clarity, especially with the inclusion of Moana Pacifica and Super Rugby over the next however many years.
And what about Miracle Failangi, chosen by Moana Pacifica, the first player to be chosen by that franchise to come out of Samoa as opposed to a player with Samoan heritage? That's clearly very encouraging. Hopefully there will be many to follow. But, I mean, is he somebody that's in your sights for the World Cup?
Oh, absolutely. Miracle is a fine young man and also very determined. And he's been rewarded for his hard work and his dedication to being a pro rugby player. He's a great example for our local boys here in Samoa around. Even though we don't have the resources or the opportunities that may be afforded in the likes of New Zealand or Australia, with a great work ethic and determination, it's possible. And I think it's just opened up the door and opened up the minds of our local boys here, because Miracle is a special one, but there are 100 other Miracles running around here in Samoa who need the opportunities. If they can get the same work ethic and determination and drive to succeed as Miracle, I think we'll be seeing a few more entering Moana Pacifica.
And were he to play for the Manu at the World Cup, I guess the headlines write themselves, don't they, if he has a good game?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And he's one we've been tracking over the last couple of years. And I think he's going to turn a few heads over in Moana Pacifica. And I think his trajectory of his development is going to get higher and higher now that he's in a full-time professional environment.
Vasamanea Silalamapasua, the man who will be in charge of the Manu Samoa squad that plays in the Pacific Nations Cup in July, and then in September, the big one, the Rugby World Cup in France. And that's just about it from this edition of Friday Morning Pacific Beat, with our focus on sport. Talking of pressure, I imagine it's on with the Fiji Rugby Union over the weekend. They have their special general meeting. Upheaval is expected. And whether former Prime Minister Frank Bainimarama will still be president after the weekend, well, we'll know soon enough. The meeting in Suva tomorrow. We'll keep you posted here on Pacific Beat, and we will throughout the weekend as we look back with Pacific Review. We're back on Monday morning with the early edition at 6:05 PNG time. Hope you can join us then. I'm Richard Hewitt. Have a great sporting weekend.